It's Sheila Cagle with the Communicate Influence podcast. This week I have a conversation with Jack Fussell, a brand strategist in Atlanta, Georgia. Jack is lead strategist with Campfire Social, a marketing and advertising agency, and founder of his own consultancy, Onward Creatives. In this episode, Jack explains the fundamentals and essentials of creating a great brand. He talks about what branding really is, and here's a hint. No, it's not a logo, business cards, or a color palette. Jack also explores why it's important to find a niche if your market segment is overcrowded. If you're a startup creating your brand or ready to rebrand your organization, Jack has a lot of knowledge and experience to share in this episode.
This episode of the Communicate Influence podcast is brought to you by PodMotion.co. PodMotion is a new podcast creation and promotional agency launching very soon. Go to PodMotion.co for details. That's PodMotion.co for details.
Hi, Jack. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having me on here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So you're a branding specialist, an entrepreneur based in Georgia. Yeah. Whereabouts are you?
Yeah, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
Cool. And tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, Jack.
Yeah, so I'm a brand strategist. I also work as a fractional CMO. And then on top of that, I have a podcast. I actually have two podcasts, and I do speaking, a lot of consulting, and probably the most important part of the entire story is that I've been married for 21 years, have three children, and spent about 12 years living abroad. So lived in Africa and Europe back and forth for about 12 years. So in a nutshell, that's who I am.
That must have been interesting, living abroad. I mean, it's such a great thing, isn't it, to expand your horizons?
Yeah, and honestly, that's pretty much everything that I do today is a result of what I experienced and saw while living in Europe. Sometimes it was the gaps that I saw, but sometimes it was also just the new thoughts, the new ways of thinking. So it was really interesting because I actually don't have a degree in business. I actually have a degree in vocal performance. I was an opera singer in college.
Wow.
So, yeah. It's one of those degrees that sounds great on the front end, and then on the back end, you're like, okay, probably never going to use that, but that was a lot of fun. So,
and do you still sing?
I mean, I just play around. So I still play guitar and piano, but no, I do not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is an interesting way into the industry. Now, I discovered you because I was looking for a good podcast on branding, and you produced one. It's called Human Centric, and it just has a wealth of information on branding and everything that makes up branding, reputation, the contact with the customers, feedback, all those kinds of things. Tell us a little bit about what branding is and how important it is to an organization.
Yeah, you know, branding and brand is one of those words that if there's 100 of us that use it, we end up with about 100 different definitions. So many people still, when they say, oh, you do branding, oh, you do logo, and you know, you make sure that our letterhead matches our business cards. And that is like a very, you know, very small version of what branding is. Branding is so much bigger than that. So what I always like to say is it's really, at the end of the day, the most simple version of understanding what a brand is understanding it really is just what your customers feel about you. When you say the name of your company, or you say the name of your brand, or you say the name of, you know, if you're an individual, you say your own name. What do people think? Are they like, oh, are they like, oh my gosh, yes, that's amazing. The work of brand building, the work of branding in and of itself is really just building up all of that. And so it is, logo's a part of that. Visual identity is a part of that. It's usually what we think of first. And it is a part of that. I mean, if your logo looks outdated, or, you know, it looks, you know, you're some cool like motorcycle company, but you're logo looks like a tech logo from the 90s, it changes the way people perceive you. But really, it's a combination of all these different things. It's just the way that you feel about a company, organization, or a person.
And so it's really a feeling thing. We're not thinking about it. We develop feelings about organizations based on our experiences or things that maybe our friends or colleagues have told us. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the lot of times I do, and when I'm doing a brand strategy, I'll show logos up. And I'm not going to say the name of the company, but I show logos up on the screen and I have people give like their first words. And, you know, usually, and I'll give the positive logos. I'll throw a Mercedes logo up there and people say, oh, classic, well-designed, you know, whatever. I'll throw, usually the second logo is something from their own industry. And maybe if it's a restaurant, I'll always show Chick-fil-A and people say, oh, hospitality, warm, inviting. There's another brand that we all know the name of in does cable and telephones and stuff like that. And every single time I show that logo on the screen, whether it's a group of two or a group of 20, there's a collective sigh of like, oh, horrible. You know, and that really is what a brand is. It's that it's not what you say about yourself. It's what other people say about you. It's the way that other people feel when they see your name or someone says it or someone says, oh my gosh, you guys want to go out to, you know, or you want to go to the Apple store and you're immediately thinking a certain amount of things pop into your head. And that really is what brand is. It's much bigger than just that visual identity.
Yeah, which a lot of people, as you said, a lot of people think it's, oh, the logo, the business cards, and you're all set. You've got your brand.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how does a brand strategy session work, especially for new businesses? What's involved in that? And, you know, what do new businesses have to do when they you know, decide to sit down and work on their brand strategy? What do they need to do?
My approach with it, I'll be honest with you, is different than a lot of people because I always start with the customer. So even this past week, I've started a new engagement with a client. And the very first thing that I do is I want to understand who the customer is. I want to understand what they're thinking. I want to understand as much about them as possible. And so a lot of times what I'll do is I do it from both internally and externally. I want to know what people think about the company, what people think about the brand, what from the customer perspective, you know, what are their needs? What do they think about? What are they searching for? What problems are they really trying to solve? So it moves way past demographics and it actually moves into psychographic because I want to understand what, you know, when that customer's sitting there looking for something online or they're searching through an app or whatever, what are they thinking? What are they feeling? What are they experiencing? You know, what do they feel themselves when they're in this search process? Because if a brand can connect with that, you know, they have a chance at earning their sale. Mm-hmm. But then I also focus on the company. You know, if 10 companies are in the same space and they're all saying the same exact things, then they're saying nothing, you know, and it's really, really common. A few years ago, I was working with a builder, a high-end builder in the area, and they were using the word luxury in their tagline. And so I pulled up their 10 competitors. Actually, 9 because that fit within a grid. So I showed up there are 9 competitors. And if you put your thumb over the logo on each of those 9 websites, they all looked identical. It was all lots of clean background, a large header with the word luxury in the tagline, all of them. So that's not a way to communicate. You cannot all just be saying the same thing or you sound like the teacher from Charlie Brown, right? All you hear is wah, 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 wah. And so much of marketing and so much of what we do trying to capture people's attention just comes across with that wah, wah, wah sound because the secret of a brand is understanding what makes the company unique and understanding what the biggest needs and values of the customers are. And then from there, it goes into a strategy to merge those two together. And that's where all of your marketing, your experience, all that stuff is simply tools to connect what makes the company so amazing and the biggest need that your customer has, connecting those. That's the art of marketing and sales.
So how early in the stage of planning a startup does that branding session happen, that strategy? Is it before even the business plan? Is it after the idea?
I honestly, personally, I like to see it happen at the early stages of the business plan because, you know, ideally, a lot of times we're, you know, what usually happens with companies, what happens with a lot of things in life is that we do all the heavy stuff first and then right, you know, oh gosh, we're launching in 2 weeks. Has anybody thought about marketing? you know, we need the website done really fast. But when you do it early, the earlier on in the process, the better you can actually know how to budget, the better you can know, you know, before you have a website built, before you have, you know, any type of collateral, before you have keywording in place and all those types of things, you can actually have strategies in place around that. And it's got to be driven by, again, that connection point. Your whole goal isn't to scream like with a megaphone and just ever who screams loudest is wins, right? That's advertising and that's the old world. And that's what drives us to spend, you know, $5 or $8 million on a Super Bowl ad is we're all trying to scream louder than each other. But the problem is when everyone screams loud, you don't listen to any of it. And so what we look for is what I look for when I work with a company is how do we marry this together and that we really understand and every part of our business becomes a tool to help capture the attention of our customer, earn their trust, give them an amazing experience, and then earn their loyalty on the back end. That really is the goal. So the earlier on in the process, I think the better that is for the company.
Mm. And so based on what you said a few minutes ago, there's obviously like market research that has to be done and connecting with potential clients to, you know, figure out exactly what their needs are, what they want, their pain points, et cetera. Yeah. Is that one of the early stages of the strategy building?
Oh yeah, definitely. And especially if it's early on, to me, then you've got a really unique opportunity to connect with customers in the marketplace that aren't even your customers yet and just find out what need isn't being met. What are you wanting as a, whatever it is you're selling, as a widget buyer, all the other widget providers, what are they not providing to you? Mm-hmm. What is falling short? Is it, you know, so many times we think, and this is, it doesn't bother me with startups, but it frustrates me because I know they could be more successful if they would think of this early on. But a lot of times in companies, we think we're selling that our biggest, you know, our biggest unique value proposition is A, when actually the biggest frustration that customers wish someone would fill is F. Mm-hmm. You know, but we go about developing and we spend so much time on R&D and all this on A, because that's what we're all passionate about. When actually the customer's like, well, that sounds kind of similar to what so-and-so offers, but a better customer experience or better user interface, you know, or whatever. And sometimes we can differentiate ourselves and actually earn market share by being great at the main thing, but really highlighting something else. You know, Airbnb is a great example of this. Airbnb doesn't really focus on the places you stay, because they're just houses. It's not like they're better built, or it's not like they're all green or you know, built from recycled whatever. They're just houses. But what they're really saying is, okay, they looked across the ecosystem and they said, we've got all these hotel chains. The prices change overnight. You pay one amount on a Thursday night, and then for the same exact room the next night, you're paying 60% more. You know, you've got all these, you land in a city and you're staying downtown in the middle of the city, far away from where the real life is. And so what Airbnb did was they said, first of all, we're going to create a better experience. The prices are the same. We tell you the price right up front. But secondly, we're going to create it around experiences. When you travel with Airbnb, it's not about a bed. It's about experiencing life like a local. Mm-hmm. And that is what I'm talking about. When you started off with that angle, you're able to build something that makes you actually stand apart. So my family and I, you know, we traveled extensively when we lived in Europe, and we rarely, if ever, stayed in a hotel. We always did Airbnbs because if I was in Berlin or Paris or London, I wanted to live life for 4 or 5 days the way they would. I didn't want to be stuck down in the tourist district where there's nothing happening overnight and, you know, you pay three times the amount for bread. I wanted to be where people were. And so that to me is what happens when you catch it right up front and then you're able to differentiate from the very, very start. Mm,
that's really interesting. Yeah. And anyway, about your own experience, you wanted to be a traveler and not a tourist. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. Now let's take an example of a crowded market, for example, web design or a digital marketing agency, that's going to be difficult. Well, it might not be, but it sounds to me as though it will be difficult to differentiate yourself. Just as an example for listeners, what would you suggest to, you know, a client, a new client, they're starting a digital marketing agency and they're struggling to differentiate? What might that be on?
Wow, that's a good one. And that definitely is a crowded space. Oh my gosh, I get, oh my gosh, the amount of, you know, because when you're in our space, you know, the way keywords work, you and I probably are, I'm especially like searching digital stuff all the time. So every ad I ever see is for either coffee, because that's the other thing I search for a lot, or digital agencies. And I just, my feed is full of them, especially my Facebook feed, my Instagram feed. So I think a few things in that space. What I notice in that space is that they're all clones of each other. I feel like they're literally all saying the same thing. I feel like it's the same color palettes. I feel like it's the same tripwires, the same lead magnets, you know, all those types of things. And so what I would say in that space is, in any space that's competitive, highly competitive, always look for, try to go about it a different angle. What is the real problem that a company has if they're looking for a digital marketing firm? It's not just someone to manage their digital. You know, it's they're doing that because something else isn't working, right? They're either not getting enough market share, or they're not selling enough. Sales are maybe down. Maybe there's a new competitor in town who, or you know, not in town, but like internet wise in town in their space, who suddenly is eating up some of their market share, and suddenly they're we need to do better digital marketing. So to me, then I would say, okay, well, we do digital marketing, but the real problem we solve is this other thing. Mm-hmm. We help you increase sales, or we help you capture more attention, or you know, whatever. It just depends on that space. But to me, what you're offering then becomes a tool to a means to an end versus the end in of itself. Most digital agencies, for example, is all about the digital. They're just a service provider. I don't want to be a service provider ever. I want to be a problem solver. I want to be a business builder. I want to be a growth accelerator who just happens to use digital marketing as one of his tools to get you there. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's, again, it's about that differentiation. You know, I mean, you could definitely look at Uber and Airbnb, just as a few, to see big examples of extremely crowded and extremely traditional markets where suddenly you've got these big disruptors who really aren't offering anything necessarily better at the end of the day, but they're offering something different, more user-friendly. That could be another way of building it, is how do you report your, like, there's so many different ways to differentiate, you know? Mm-hmm. But again, to me, it all starts and stops with who that customer is. What is their biggest need? How can I uniquely meet that need in a way that my competition can't? Mm.
And so, in terms of the connection between that and reputation, tell us a little bit about that. For established companies, obviously, it's not too difficult. You already have a reputation. For startups, you might not have a reputation. So many young people are going into starting their own businesses now. How do you get that going when no one knows you? How do you get that kind of warm, positive feeling towards your brand?
Yeah, there's two ways. So if you are a new startup, I think one of the most unique things, and there's a company doing it right now that I'm interacting with on a daily basis on LinkedIn, where they've actually asked, they're smaller, they're not a complete startup, but they're not very old either, just a few years in. They've enabled and asked every one of their senior leaders in the company to be active on LinkedIn doing content creation. Mm. And so daily now, you know, it started the first day I followed the CEO, interacted with some of his posts. Next thing you know, I've interacting with about 10 of them on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So that's a company that I'm not fully aware of what they do, but I'm trusting the people that run it. I'm loving the content they're pushing. I'm loving the way they think. I'm loving the way that they are building a team and they're encouraging their people to do all this, and their people are trying. Some of the posts are better than others, but that's just because probably for some of them, it's the first time they've ever created content. So to me, sometimes you just have to look for different ways to earn that reputation. Because again, sometimes at the end of the day, even if you are selling B2B, unless you're selling to AI, unless you know a computer somewhere is who you're selling to, you are actually selling to a person. Mm-hmm. And we, at the end of the day, we all prefer to do business with people we like. If price is the same, if offerings are similar, even if price is more, a lot of times we'll choose someone we like more than someone we don't care for or we don't even know. And so to me, if you're a startup, you know, things like podcasting, things like YouTube channels, things like content creation online, like true content creation, not this one directional content creation of that you see so much on Instagram and Facebook. And even on LinkedIn, you see it a fair amount where it's just, you know, it starts off as content and it quickly moves into a sales pitch. That's not what I'm talking about, but it truly is like, I'm just going to give. Right? I'm just going to give, add value. Reputation is earned in that space. Reputation doesn't come from the ask. Reputation comes from the give and the delivery. You have to ask in there somewhere to get the sale, but it really reputation is built around how are they interacting with me before I'm their customer? And then once I'm their customer, how are they interacting with me? And that is where reputation is built. For a large company or an established company, it doesn't have to be large, but for an established company, it really is just evaluating what is currently going on. And one of the things I'm amazed at, you know, I do a full brand audit when I'm onboarding any new client, where I look at things from 1,000 different perspectives. And the first thing I do is I have 3 or 4 fake email addresses that I use, and I sign up for the newsletters. I sign up, if there's a contact form, I sign up for that. And you would be shocked at how many times I go to a dead link afterwards, or I never receive, you know, one company promised on the internet, you know, we'll be back in touch with you within 12 hours. It took them 48 hours to get back to me. Mm. And they don't even know this is going on. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times I'll get on and realize, I'll ask a company, do you realize your last 5 Google reviews were 1-star? Oh gosh, we had no idea. You know, and so there, when you're busy building the business, you don't have time to do that. But that's part of my job as a strategist, is to look for the blind spots, the brand leaks, the reputation leaks, and then look for ways to fill them, to plug them up, so that, you know, you're not losing that reputation all throughout the journey.
Yeah, Jack, you just made a great point, and it was about Buzzsprout and the fact that their content marketing is great. It's, you know, full of resources for podcasters. You don't have to be a Buzzsprout user. It's just giving, as you say. And I think that's great.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And the thing is, it's interesting with content, is there's rarely anything that you and I want to search for that we can't find somewhere else. There truly is. Like, there's, because of the internet, information is everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. The problem with it is that information is everywhere and we don't know how to make sense of it. And so what I call the Oprah phenomenon. Oprah was incredible, and she still is, about, it's almost like she just, you know, I picture her somewhere, and I'm sure it's not her because she's probably has a massive team, but you've seen her Christmas show, right? Her favorite things, where she shows you the 20 best gifts that you have to have for Christmas. And of course she gives you all of them. And what I picture her is like sitting in her massive house somewhere, with just boxes after boxes after boxes of stuff, and she's trying every one herself. I know that's not how it works. She has a team of people that do that and come to her with it. But what it does is she curates the very best for her audience. It was the way she did her book club, right? She's like, instead of having to go through all these books and all these options, I'm going to tell you the best ones to read. And it all started with the way she did her TV show. It all stems back to that, which is, I'm going to tell you the best stories. I'm going to bring the best guest on. There's all these things going on, but I'm going to curate for you. And so as a result, she built a tribe.
Yeah.
Information is everywhere. There's nothing that you and I right now, if you said, Jack, how do I blank? We could both pull up Google and have multiple different videos, probably 10 different ways of doing it within seconds. My question to you is, Sheila, which one of the 10 is the best way? So if I want to start a podcast, for example, I can search it and there are a million people telling me a million different ways of doing it. And I remember when I first started mine, I looked up, I made the mistake that if you want to get lost down a rabbit hole and you have nothing to do one night and you want to spend 10 hours confusing yourself, just type in best gear for podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
Because you will see a thousand different ways of doing it, right? There's, you know, like I use a USB mic. There's people that promote that. There's people with all this gear and there's all these different configurations. And really quickly you realize, I don't know which one of these is best. I have no idea. So when a company like Buzzsprout creates content, they're curating for you the best of the best. And because you buy into their reputation, you trust them, you say, basically, if you tell me how to do it, I'm just going to do it. And that is what the heart of content creation is that we follow people in various spaces that we don't have time to become experts at it. And so we need someone to take all the information, curate it down, and only offer us the best. And then we all have our little tribes that we form. Some people are, you know, Buzzsprout, some people are Libsyn, some people are all these various different podcast people and spaces. And we each kind of lock into that. And then pretty much anything they offer up, we're going to follow after. And that, you know, if you look at how branding and marketing should be, man, wouldn't it be awesome if we all had tribes who rallied around our business or our organization or whatever, and they just fully bought into what we do? That's the actual big time goal.
Mm. Yeah. And the point that you made earlier about this, brand or company that you were working with, you had a number of email addresses you signed up for, their newsletter or various channels. I find that selecting a brand, it can come down to the smallest thing, like the example that you gave where they promised to get back in touch with you within 12 hours and it was 24 or 48 hours. That can be crucial because that says you can't be trusted. You know,
exactly.
you might miss deadlines. So staying on top of those things, it's so important. That is what your reputation is about, as well as the people behind the company.
Oh, yeah, 1,000% correct. You know, I truly believe this with all my heart, that we should never be searching and hunting for revenue. What we need to be after every single day is trust. Trust is the actual currency of business. When you trust someone, you give them their money. Your money. When a company or a brand does something to lose our trust, the money follows as well, right? It doesn't take much for a restaurant to have one case of foodborne illness that, you know, or one restaurant that has an issue and suddenly the revenue just tanks because wherever trust goes, revenue follows after that. And you're right. Sometimes, you know, our thought is, and it's conscious. Sometimes we see the evidence. We're like, wow. They promised 12 hours and it took them four times that amount. What's it going to be like if I work with them? You know, are they going to deliver? Is everything going to always take four times as much? Sometimes it's just subtle. You know, I've worked with companies that had one company recently had four or five different email extensions. So they, you know, blank, blank, blank at Gmail, blank, blank, blank at Yahoo. One of them actually had a, you know, blank, blank, blank at AOL. I was like, how do you even have that anymore? But they did. And those little things, even right there, just speak. And even if you're not consciously aware of it, what it subconsciously tells you is, whoa, 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 put some red flags up, right? They're not focused on the details. So sometimes it is something as simple as that. We always think, oh, I need to do a massive ad campaign or a big TV thing or, you know, a big, massive Google spend. And it's like, no, actually, just fix the small things. Respond to people when you promise them. Make sure your email marketing works. You know, there's still two clients that I'm working with that I've been working with for 4 months. I've never received an email from them. And I signed up with three different emails.
Wow.
So something's not working, right? Something, they promised me something they haven't delivered upon. And so as I go deeper with them, that'll be part of what we fix. But those little things, you're so right. The little things a lot of times are where we actually lose people.
Yeah. Now, Jack, that's kind of a nice segue into what happens when a company, a brand, loses that customer trust. What can they do to turn things around and regain it?
You know, we've seen plenty of examples of what they shouldn't do. The usual response is, oh, we just tanked something, so let's throw our name everywhere, you know, which makes no sense to me. It's like, you know, breaking up with someone and then, you know, putting, renting every billboard in the area, trying to show them you're not a creep. And it's like, no, I yep. don't want to see, you know, yeah, you just yeah. broke my heart. And now you're, you know, you're putting your picture all over every billboard in the city saying, I'm a great guy. And it's like, no, that's not the way to do it. I think what you truly just have to do, I know what you truly have to do, is you, it has to be authentic. You know, the whole lipstick on a pig expression is so true here. Unless a lot of times what we like to do is, well, I've got a pig, let me just put a brighter shade of lipstick on it and people won't, they won't notice. Everyone notices. The closer you get, you realize this is not a princess I'm getting ready to kiss. It's a pig. And the difference is substantial. So you actually have to, and this is the hard work of brand building, is you actually have to turn the pig into a princess. The level of transparency we have today is just insane. I mean, even this week we saw with CrossFit, one little tweet has changed their business and possibly ruined their business because of one little thing. You know, we no longer live in a world where I can have a bad experience in Austin, Texas, and people in New York, they don't know about it. No, it's everywhere, right? I mean, I can sit in a restaurant, and before I pay the bill, I can leave a Yelp review that's either really positive or really negative. So we no longer live in a space where you can say, well, we had, you know, we've got these, you know, four restaurants in Dallas that are tanking and they're horrible and people are getting sick. But you know what? Those people in New York, they'll never hear about it. No, like thanks to Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and we've seen that the last few weeks, right? Where telephones and our mobile devices are communicating news faster than news organizations can. It spreads at lightning speed. And the same thing happens with brands. People have a bad experience or someone tweets the wrong thing or you know, says the wrong thing in an interview, and suddenly before PR can even get their hands around it, it's out of control. So the only way to fix it is to actually fix it, to actually just address it, own up to it, and put a plan of action. You know, people are forgiving. We all have made mistakes. We've all delivered less than our best in situations. So people understand that. But I think the whole, oh, let's just out campaign it. Let's just, you know, just increase our Google. I mean, you can do that and you will increase sales, but it's going to be at such an inefficient rate. Whereas if you just took the time to fix it and actually went to, you know, I was working with a builder a few years ago, different builder than I mentioned earlier, who was having a horrific customer experience. Like their reviews were just, they used this massive review company because these homes were like 1.1 or 1 million to like, you know, 3 million. And a lot of people buying them were paying in cash. So these were people that were, these are high level executives. This was a second or third home. They expected like the most amazing experience. They expected like, you know, I don't know, like Mercedes level experience, and they felt like they were getting more like, you know, the way it works at a Kia or a Hyundai, right? It's just different. Neither one's bad. It's just different. They were expecting this like concierge service and it wasn't. And so the we had just finished brand identity. This was when I was with an agency and we just finished their identity, and they said, Jack, can you help us design something that will fix this? And I told them what I just told you, which is, I can't design, none of us can design anything that's going to fix that. Like I can't design a little print piece or something that's going to suddenly make, you know, someone who spent $2 million on a home and got crappy service and the home's still not finished. I can't fix that with a print piece. So what I did instead was I got all their executives together and in a room, and I said, okay, let me ask you this question. And I had a giant whiteboard and there were 9 people sitting at the table. And I said, tell me what success looks like. Tell me what success for this company looks like. 9 people, 9 totally different answers. And I turned around and I said, this is your problem. I circled it with a giant whiteboard marker and I said, this is your problem. Your company is fragmented. No one is on the same page. And so over the next few months, we did exactly that. We came up with new mission, vision, values. We spread it all throughout the company. We did onboarding. And then we hosted a luncheon. A high-end luncheon with all the disgruntled homeowners, and we had the company simply apologize. They simply apologized. They gave people a space to vent. It was well-documented. And then we showed them exactly. We didn't give lip service, but we actually showed them exactly what we were going to do to fix it. They said, here's the new software we're using, which will allow our, you know, our subcontractors to communicate faster with the GCs. And they laid out and said, here's exactly how we're fixing that. And that company is now turned around. People are in love with them. The reputation has increased. So I think that it's a very long answer to your question, but this is the hard work of brand building. Again, a new logo, a new website, new letterhead is not going to fix reputation. It can help fix a little bit of the image and the way people perceive you, but reputation is reputation. It takes some work to get it and keep it.
Now, one of the things that I find intriguing, or I found intriguing when I was going through your human-centric podcast, it was really interesting to listen to your episode. It's almost 3 years old now, but I still think it's very true because we hear this word a lot, and that is empathy. And you have one episode called titled Empathy, the Future of Branding. And that might sound like, well, how does that work? You know, what's the connection there? Can you tell our listeners about that and your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I still think empathy, it's always funny when someone mentions something from 3 years ago because you're like, oh, I totally forgot I did that. I probably need to re-record it for update a little bit. But empathy to me is actually the heart. If you were to suck off everything else that I truly believe about branding and that I've kind of learned from these big brands that do it so well, is that really it is all about empathy. It's all about putting yourself in the place of the other person. It's understanding how they feel. It's not sympathy, like, oh, I feel bad for you. But empathy is actually like wearing someone else's emotions, right? It's when we, if they're heartbroken, we take that on. If they're excited, we become excited. Like we really do put ourselves in the place of that customer. And you know, one of our favorite brands, because I'm a total nerd about this, and I've raised now at least one, maybe two children who believe the same way. We are big Disney nerds. Like we love to go to the parks. For me, it's just. I get to be a kid again. I just have a blast. I totally just geek out and become the oldest kid. I'm not old, but one of the older kids running down the street there. And you can tell that they've built their entire brand around empathy, that they understand when someone, you know, where just every part of it, from the moment you call in to the way that they, they just explain everything so carefully. It's such a thoughtful process. It's such a well thought out process. Another one who kills it, this one's really applicable to think about, which is Apple. You know, Apple, you get online and if you've registered your device, they already know your number and all that stuff. You don't have to sit. You can pick a time. They call you back usually within a minute. If for some reason you have to take it to the store, if they can't fix it, you know, via screen share or whatever. And they must know me and know this is the way to my heart because every single time I walk in the Apple store, they're like, oh, Mr. Fussell, you look so sharp today. Love those socks. And I'm thinking, oh, finally someone notices just how great I'm dressed. And then they, you know, the entire process. And then you sit there for all of like 45 seconds and someone walks up to you, Mr. Fussell, so good to see you today. What's going on with your computer? The entire process is just so thoughtful. It's like they understand the last thing I want to do is sit on hold for 2 hours. Who has time for that? They also understand that the last thing any of us want to do is show up to a store, a physical location, have to do something. And so they greet you. They alleviate all the stress. They take all the stress upon them. And to me, that's what empathy really does, is it says to your customer, we're going to own all the anxiety ourselves. We're going to own all of that, and we're going to make this as effortless as humanly possible for you. And to me, that's the beauty of what Apple does, what Disney does, and so many others do. And it really does change the way you operate, not just the way you market. I had a phone one time with Apple that I had paid for AppleCare, and it was about, I think it was like 6 or 7 weeks outside of AppleCare, and the microphone wouldn't work. Like literally, you know, I have a phone and yes, I can play all these games and do all this fun stuff, but I couldn't talk, which occasionally we still do on a phone, right?
Occasionally.
And so I called Apple and they went through their whole thing and then they finally said, well, sir, you know, we have bad news for you. You're about 6 weeks outside of your AppleCare. I said, okay, you know, I understand. Just how much, what are we talking rate-wise? And she said, hold on a second. She came back and she said, sir, I just looked up and you own 14 Apple devices. We're going to take care of this. You're a loyal customer. We're going to make sure we take care of you. Just come on in. We'll have a new phone ready within about 35 minutes.
That's fantastic. That
is what keeps my loyalty, right? Yes, their products are expensive. Yes, sometimes they don't work as well, maybe as an Android device does. But the fact that they are so user-friendly and they've built out this process that truly feels like they know what I'm going through. That to me is a sign of a great brand, is when you can say, they know what I'm going through and they've designed this amazing experience with me in mind.
Yeah. And it's as you mentioned earlier, Jack, people are forgiving. You know, things do break. We all accept that now. Technology isn't perfect, but it's how you're treated and how it's handled by the company when that does happen. And that's the kind of thing that's going to retain your loyalty.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, a lot of those examples that you gave, I would, you know, imagine that they're really down to, you know, brilliant customer training. To get everybody, you know, singing from the same hymn sheet, you know, responding in the way that the company wants you as an employee to respond. Let's take that down a level to much smaller companies who you'd think that, you know, people would know these things naturally if they want to stay in business, but that doesn't always happen. So what are your tips there to smaller businesses to, you know, get them on track and help them emulate these Apple and Disney and the other brands that do it so well?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, I always say, why never reinvent the wheel. Like, if you can just learn from someone who's done it really, really well, learn from them. One of the things I'm shocked at is how few startups, or, you know, they'll reference other companies or whatever, but how few of them study it. And one of the things I encourage people to do is, no matter what industry they're starting, because here's the crazy thing. I had a potential client earlier, asking me if they're in a certain space, and I've done some work in that space, but not a ton. And they said, do you have a lot of experience in this space? And I said, not a ton. I have some clients in that space, but not, you know, this isn't the only space I've ever worked in. And I said, actually, you don't want that. And they said, why? And I said, because with experience comes baggage, right? If I've only worked in the hospitality industry my entire life and you're wanting me to help with a hospitality brand, there's a very strong possibility I'm going to say this phrase, we've always done it that way, you know, that type of thing. So one of the things I encourage brands to do is go experience other great places. You know, if you're anywhere near Disney and you're wanting to start anything that has a customer service side to it, go to Disney for the day, like book stuff. Watch the way it works. You know, yes, you have to ride some rides and you have to eat some great food, but part of it is you're just there to study. Study what's going on. You know, if you're in, regardless of what you're in, if there's a Ritz-Carlton or an amazing hotel that is known for their customer experience, go there. Go to a restaurant. Go book a room and go through the process. Go feel what it's like to be, and take that then, and then bring it into your own company and take your leadership team, like not just one person. One person can't create a culture. A team can create a culture. So just, there are all these amazing opportunities right around us. Every city has something amazing. Every city has some business or industry or something that is killing it in their space. And it's actually better if they're not in your space, because then you're not looking for the, you know, it's real easy if you're building a restaurant to go to another restaurant and just pick apart what silverware they're using or what napkins they're using. I don't want you to do that, because then you're missing the, you know, you're seeing the trees, but you're missing the forest. I want you to go somewhere that has nothing to do with what you do. And then you can take in that experience. And the most important thing is you can realize what it's like, what it feels like, what that magic feels like. Then you just have to go back and figure out in your own space how to create that. So with small companies, it can be a little more difficult, because typically you don't have the seniority on a C-suite. You typically don't have the resources to develop this massive training or onboarding program. But at the same time, it's also easier because you don't have 20 locations to visit or 10,000 people to train. So I think it's just really, it all kind of goes back to strategy of, at the beginning, saying, this is our mission, vision, values. And I know that those are not sexy anymore. I know that a lot of people think they're old and they're outdated. But to me, it's vital because that is actually where your brand, you know, what's going to hold your brand together is you've got to say, this is where we're heading. This is why we're heading there. And this is how we're heading there. These are the values. This is what's going to shape what we do. And I think you can, you know, you can look at creative companies like Disney and others who, I think Disney's for a long time was basically, we create magic. Like that was just what they do. Uh-huh. There was nothing about hotels or software or plush or any of these things. It was simply, we create magic. And then every one of their, so what I would encourage a small company to do is come up with a mission, vision, values. And leadership can do that if you're in a really small startup. The whole team can help create those. And then you simply start every division saying, okay, you know, if our thing is we create magic, then how do we do that in the finance department? How do we do that in the HR department? How do we do that in the customer or the field techs or whatever it is that you're doing? Every division or every little team or whatever comes up with, this is how we create magic. And once you do that, then you've got that thread that runs through your entire company that creates that culture, which eventually will also create this amazing experience and this consistent brand experience for your customers. But it all starts with that. You've got to be on the same page. If you're not on the same page from the very beginning, there is no chance that you will have a consistent brand experience.
That's so true. Very good advice there. Thank you, Jack. Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you'd like to add or anything that you'd like to explore, discuss, or share with our listeners?
No, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, at the end of the day, and the reason I called this thing human-centric years ago when I started this other podcast was because I really want us, you know, I said this earlier, I wrote this earlier, maybe on LinkedIn or something, which is a great brand has never been, great brands are not built in Adobe Illustrator. They're built in human interactions. And that is what I want companies to understand and not get so caught up in the visual identity of what they're doing. You know, it breaks my heart when I see, I think it's 500,000 businesses per year, or it was some astronaut. It was probably more than that. Maybe it was per month or something in the U.S. fail. And sometimes it's just, you know, bad luck, you know, starting an airline 2 weeks before COVID hits, bad luck. You know, several restaurants in our area have gone out of business because their first week was the week of shelter in place. Can't come back from that. Sometimes it's just bad, you know, bad place, bad whatever. I've seen restaurants go out of business because they opened and then the road, you know, went under construction and it just tanked their business for the first 2 years. So sometimes there's nothing you could do about it. But a lot of times it's because we're simply focused on the wrong things, because we focus on something that the customers really don't care about. And we put a lot of time and effort into it. And then we don't understand how we can possibly stand out, and we're not standing out. So what I would just encourage people to do, at the end of the day, the reason I do this is I'm driven by one big thing. And that is, I want to help people succeed. I do coaching with startups and with entrepreneurs because I want to help them succeed. I work with an agency that I'm a partner at because I want to help those clients succeed. I do my own fractional CMO work and project work and brand strategy work because I want to help other people. I want to see other people succeed. Because here's the truth. Behind every big business, it's just a bunch of people. It's just people. It's people that are wanting to pay for a vacation next month. It's people that are wanting to pay for their kids' braces or vacation. Every business has those people. It's just a grouping of people who have agreed to do something together, and they're trying to make a success of it. So at the end of the day, I want to give them every resource I can possibly give them to increase their odds of succeeding and increase their odds of growing their company. And to me, that just starts with understanding what a brand is, and really that it's just about people. It's just understanding people, thinking of people, and doing everything you can in your business to take care of those people. The businesses that do that with a consistent product, they're going to succeed. They're going to do well.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I suppose just to add as well, you know, make sure you've got feedback channels open. You know, if you think that you should be standing out for something or well-known for something and you're not. Talk to your customers and find out what they're thinking and feeling.
Yeah, it's a conversation. And I think that's the biggest thing is we need to put down the megaphone and actually just sit across the table from them. And those conversations will build loyalty so much faster than just screaming through a megaphone, come buy it, come buy it, come buy me. You know, that whole thing we do through traditional marketing and that approach. But I think customers at the end of the day, they want to sit down, have a conversation, understand that brand, trust that brand, and then they will be loyal for life.
Mm. That's brilliant, Jack. Really thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. Learned so much. It was like listening to a whole new podcast. So thanks so much.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. You did a great job. It was so much fun sharing. So appreciate it.